This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very, very, very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So send us an email or give us a call. Talk a little sports with us this afternoon. Jack Ebling will be here shortly, and we'll make our predictions for this week's Big Ten games, and we'll do that. So give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Alex is here with us, and we'll get his some of his picks up for this week's game. So that'll be coming up shortly right here on AM 870 WKAR. Drew Sharp is on his way back from Oakland, California. Hasn't gotten town yet, so he won't be with us today as he's still traveling back with the Tigers. And their very impressive win, Justin Verlander. You know, that's it's nice to have a security blanket like Justin Verlander. Very nice, because, you know, it was going to be he locked it up last night. And when you got a security blanket like that, you don't lose often. But if you lose, you know, he definitely doesn't give you anything. But it's nice he came through for the Tigers, as now they get ready for either Baltimore or New York. It'll be an interesting game. I know Jack will probably be watching that tonight, and we'll talk some baseball. But let's bring in Jack Ebling and hear what he has to say about the Tigers. Hey, Jack, how you doing?
Doing fine, Earl. I won't be watching any baseball today. I watched a lot the last couple of days, but today I'm going to be a little busy. I've got, of course, your show, the highlight of the day. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a book signing from 3 to 5 today over at SPS on Grand River. And then the Players Association is having their annual homecoming dinner, and I'll be there at that, giving a little speech and moderating a panel discussion on Biggie Munn and Duffy Doherty. And then after that's Midnight Madness. So it's going to be a busy day, and I'll catch up on baseball about 2 a.m.
Okay, well, you probably have Alex over at one of your book signings there. He wants to get a book from you.
Well, obviously, Alex has great taste, despite his current employer. And, you know, he looks like he's going to be a giant in this profession. I just hope he can overcome.
Hey, Jack, when's Earl's book coming out?
Before Earl can write a book, he has to read one.
That's all I do is read them.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, all right. Okay.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little football today, and we can talk a little bit of Tigers. I mean, the Tigers, it's nice to have a security blanket like Justin Verlander, who, you know, you almost count on a win every time he goes out. Sure, and he's such a good pitcher. I mean, 6-0, a shutout. As he said, he wasn't coming out of last night's game, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he is just so dominant when he's on. Mm-hmm. You can't get to him in the first couple innings. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, you throw the ball 95 miles an hour, and then you've got that change of pace with the same arm motion at about 84, 85, and then you can dial it up to 100 if you need to. He's got great command of the strike zone, and he's getting a big strike zone. A lot of people are talking about the advantage that NBA stars have. Justin Verlander has a little bit wider strike zone, I think. It's an inch on each side.
Yeah, it does. It looks very impressive, and he's just one of those pitchers that's unique, because we know most pitchers, once they let it go, they have no idea where that ball is going.
Well, you would think that they would have some concept. The good ones do, but a lot of times the ball gets away, and it doesn't take much. If the ball misses by 4 or 5 inches and comes out right over the center of the plate, you know, if you break down the pitches one by one, and you see where they cross the plate, and if they're in that sweet spot, major league hitters are going to nail them. They're going to learn to time just about anything. So you've got to work the corners. You've got to change speeds. You've got to move them in and out. And Verlander's able to do that with some amazing stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, it'll be interesting tonight. I don't know how much I'll get to watch it. Like, I'll be over there at Midnight Madness by the time, because I'll be going to the Mason-Waverly game tonight. Waverly still needs a win to get into the playoffs, so it should be a good one.
You're not going to see much baseball either.
No. No, a lot of football today.
Yeah. You call Fred Heumann. He'll give you the play-by-play, pitch-by-pitch.
Oh, that's true. Fred Heumann would definitely do that for us. Hey, well, let's look at our games this week. Drew called in his picks a little bit earlier, so we'll see how his go. But I think we'll both probably take Michigan State this week.
Well, before we start with that, where are we with the standings?
Okay, Alex, give them the standings.
All right, so all of you guys went 4-1 last week. The games that obviously you guys each got the loss in, the first game was the Purdue game. Jack, you took Purdue, and then Earl and Drew took Michigan. But in the Northwestern game, Drew and Earl both took Northwestern. They obviously lost to Penn State. So overall, standings are still the same, all pretty close. 42-9 at first place with Jack. Drew is 40-11, two games back. And Earl, you're a game back from Drew now. You're climbing back slowly.
Yeah, I'll get there. We got a few weeks left. Yeah, well, let's look at this week, Jack. I mean, I'm looking at the home teams, to me, look pretty good. I like Michigan State over Iowa. That's the thing with Iowa. As we've seen a lot of good games, Michigan State and Iowa has had some pretty good games over the years. I remember one, of course, the one 2 years ago when Iowa won it on the last play. But we've had some good games. We've had some blowouts, but most of the time, the Iowa-Michigan State rivalry is pretty good. And the teams, basically, their styles are very similar, aren't they?
The 2009 game is the one I think you're talking about, the night game.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin McNutt beat Chris L. Rucker on that slant route for the winning touchdown on the last play of the game. But, these teams have had a lot of very close games. The last 2 years excluded, Iowa led 30-0 at halftime 2 years ago in Iowa City, and that was Michigan State's biggest loss of the last 29 games. And last year, Michigan State went in and was in complete control very early in that game and went on at 137-21. So other than that, these games have almost always been competitive. And I think this one might be competitive into the second half, too. I'm going to take Michigan State, though.
Okay. Well, let's take another easy game. Illinois at Michigan. I'll take the Wolverines. It looks like Michigan is riding their ship, and it's sailing pretty good right now. So I know we'll have to hear a lot of boasting, of course, from the Michigan fans, but that's expected. But how do you see that Illinois-Michigan game?
Well, I think Michigan is getting better. I don't know that I can say that everything is as copacetic as you might believe. Two games where team has barely scored a point, and then they played some outman competition, done very well. I did think last week was a very good effort for Michigan, coming off the bye week, and was able to dominate a Purdue team that I thought would win that game. So I give Michigan props for that. But this is another blowout in the making, and we'll see how Michigan is when they play Michigan State, Nebraska, and Ohio State. But for right now, if you look at it, you have to say Illinois is the worst team in the Big Ten.
Yes, and let's look at that one next up. I mean, Illinois they're going against Michigan, but I mean, the other team is pretty bad too. We saw them last week, Indiana against Ohio State this week. So I don't think Indiana's going to go much further than just taking another beating. I mean, State had to come back last week to beat them, but I don't think Ohio State will have to come back to beat Indiana.
I think Indiana is a little bit better. A little bit better than we thought. We saw that when they played UMass, the team that Michigan rolled, and Indiana won 45-6. And had some disappointments too, but I think Indiana's getting better. And with that offensive system where they run a play every 11 or 12 seconds, that's an adjustment for most defenses. I think Ohio State will win and will pull away and win comfortably, but I don't know that there's that much difference between Ohio State and Michigan State. We saw that a couple weeks ago. It looked like they're about even. That game could have gone either way, and if they played seven times, it probably would have been 4-3, maybe, for the Buckeyes. But as you look at a game like that at night, it's going to be a big event. Maybe Ohio State looks past Indiana to some degree, and I think that their strength will prevail, and they'll win by a couple of touchdowns.
Okay. Well, let's look at your team, your big team that you were just foaming all over. Of course, that was Purdue. They've got a pretty good game this week. They've got to play at Wisconsin is coming to Purdue. And honestly, I'm not so sure. You probably take Purdue again, but I think I'm going to take the the Badgers this week.
Well, first of all, can you tell us what Drew is taking in these games?
We all agreed on those three.
He's six, and then you just wait and change him. We don't even know what he's taking now.
I got him written down somewhere. I'll have to find him. The only one I know he's taking Minnesota over Northwestern. He agreed on the other three, and I think he's going to take this one I just told you about. He's going with Wisconsin over Purdue, I'm pretty sure.
All right, I'm going to stick with the Boilermakers, and I think if Purdue can win this game, it's still going to be in Indianapolis. I'll tell you why. I think it can get through the season with two Big Ten losses, plays Ohio State coming up, and that would mean that Wisconsin would have to finish with one Big Ten loss. It already has that. If Wisconsin and Purdue would both finish 6-2, Purdue would win the tiebreaker if it wins this week in West Lafayette. And I think he'll bounce back. I'm a big believer in the law of the middle, that if a good team plays a horrible game, it bounces back the next week. And I think that's what you're going to see with Purdue. Purdue couldn't have played any worse than it did last week. And this is really its chance against a divisional rival to get a leg up to get to Indy.
Yeah, and this other one, it could be, you could be watching a team that's going to get to Indy, Northwestern, playing at Minnesota. A lot of people have got this as a toss-em game. I look at, I think Northwestern is the better team, and I'm going to take Northwestern in this one. I think Drew took, I'm pretty sure he took Minnesota in this one. So, but that's the one that that surprised me a little bit. But I'm going to stick with Northwestern with the Wildcats. I think they're a lot better. I mean, we said they're good, but we don't do that very good or talk about them very well. Even though we both think they're a pretty good team, but it'll be interesting to see if they can beat Minnesota, which I think they should beat Minnesota. If they're as good as we think they are, they should beat Minnesota. So I'm going to go with Northwestern.
All right, I don't think Northwestern is very good, but I think its offense is exciting. And I don't think Minnesota is very good. So I'm going to take Northwestern, rather, in a very close game. Northwestern plays a lot of close games. I think it's going to have just a little too much explosion in a game by a touchdown or less. I'll take the Wildcats.
Okay. Well, let's turn to the pros for a minute. The Lions have got an interesting game this weekend, going up against the Eagles in Philadelphia, which Michael Vick can't get out of his own way. That should make that for an interesting game, since the Lions' defense always is getting out of the way of the opposing team. So it'll be an interesting game from that standpoint. We've got two really could be pretty good offenses. The defenses are very suspect, it looks like, on both sides.
Why do you say Michael Vick can't get out of its own way? I mean, I've seen him have a couple of good games, and they've won a couple close ones.
And he can't, because how many times he's fumbled the ball and given up the ball, on the ground. So, he can't get out of his own way with all the mistakes and all the fumbles and interceptions he's been throwing.
Well, I'll take Philadelphia in this game, and I don't expect the Lions to win it. I think they'll be 1-4. Going down from there, but as I look at this game, Philadelphia's got as good a chance in that division as anyone, except maybe the Giants.
That's true, and the Lions. I think what's happening now is what we see with the Lions is everyone is coming in prepared to play them because they assume that they're a pretty good team. They didn't assume that last year, and they were still coming in just giving a half-hearted effort. No one's doing that against the Lions anymore. They're going to get the full team's best effort, so that's going to cause a lot of problems. If the Lions might be lucky to finish 9-7 this year.
Yeah, I think that sometimes when you go forward, you take a step back. The hardest thing to do is sustain and maintain what you've done. Mm-hmm. And the Lions still have some deficiencies, no question.
Yeah, they've got a lot of deficiencies. Hopefully they can overcome some of them. That's one thing we do know. They've got a great fan base. The Lions definitely have the best fan base in Michigan. I mean, we often said, Jack, if the Lions ever get to the Super Bowl, that'll be – It'll take take up what the Red Wings have celebrated, winning the Stanley Cup, and what the Tigers have done when they will win the World Series before, when they got to the finals. I mean, if the Lions can ever get to the Super Bowl, that, you know, we might have to go down to Detroit ourselves and join in on the partying.
Well, you keep saying if you were 18 inches taller, you could dunk.
Uh-huh.
But I have a job for Alex.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he's looking for one, but I have one for him. He can be the designated driver for Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, he might take that one. Ndamukong, I would assume he tips pretty good.
Well, he certainly needs a chauffeur.
Now, you know who he was dating, don't you?
Sue? No.
Yeah, Sue. You know who Sue's dating? Who's been dating? He's been dating the Olympic hurdler, Lolo Jones.
Oh, really?
Yes.
My son Zapka got to know Lolo over in Beijing and saw her a little bit.
Okay. Well, we've got some interesting games this week. It'll be interesting to see how these Big Ten games go. And we've got some interesting games nationally, that's for sure. But let's turn our attention and talk. We got to talk a little baseball today because the Tigers, the Tigers winning and clinching their game against Oakland. Impressive. And Oakland was a very good team. Of course, nobody knew who the players are. They're all out of that Moneyball era. And they got good players, and they definitely had a good run this year so far.
Right, absolutely. The Tigers underachieved for most of the season, you could say. A lot of people thought they'd win that division by 10 games, and they needed to rally in the last week to get it done. But I always said that once they got into the postseason, they would be a very dangerous out. And the one team New York did not want to see was Detroit. And now Detroit is there waiting, going to play the winner of the Yankees and the Orioles. So I think the Tigers are well positioned. Got a big break last night with the Orioles beating the Yankees. That means that C.C. Sabathia would not pitch game one of the ALCS. He's got to pitch game five today. So that helps the Tigers a little bit, too.
Yes, and that definitely helps the Tigers for sure. So we'll have to look and see how that goes with that matchup. They should be a little, they probably don't know as much about Baltimore as they probably should. But Baltimore, as we know, is a good team. They're giving the Yankees everything they can handle. So we'll see how that series breaks out. Since 2-2, this is going to be the game winner. And Baltimore would be a surprise. Obviously, everyone looks for the Yankees to get there, but Baltimore might upend them and might take that win, and then that'll be a surprise, a series between the Tigers and Baltimore. But it could end up that way.
Well, whenever you get in a game five, anything can happen. They say you want to get it over before that point, or game seven in most series.
Yeah.
You don't want to let it come down to a bounce or a break or a call. And that's the position the Yankees find themselves in now. So the Orioles have hung with them all year. And the last week, those teams were tied. And the Orioles had a one-game lead late in the season. So you have to take them seriously at this point.
Okay. Hey, Jack, we got to take a short break. Todd is on the line. He's got a question for you. So we'll take a short break and bring you back and answer Todd's question.
Can stay about another 5-10 minutes.
Okay. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The debate about marijuana as a drug is heating up again in Washington. I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday for a look at how cannabis helps cancer patients and its other medicinal uses. Plus, tracking the ozone hole. Could there be another one in the North Pole? That's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. A high of 52 and mostly sunny today. Partly cloudy skies tonight and a low in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms are likely, and the high will be 55. On Sunday, rain is likely with a chance of thunderstorms. Windy as well, with a high in the low 70s.
355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Let's go to the phones. We've got Todd on the line. Todd, you got a question for Jack.
Good afternoon, Earl. Good afternoon, Mr. Edling. I have a quick question on Michigan State football and then two basketball. I'm a little late to the party, so you might address this. Jack, I haven't heard what your theory is that, and I'm not coming at a kid, but I think most Michigan State football fans would say that we've been a little underwhelmed by William Golston's performance this year. I know he's out there giving his best, and maybe you're going to tell me he's just not as good as what we all thought he was, but I haven't heard in the season, you know, they're halfway through, so it's not over, but I haven't heard what your opinion on that is. And then out of the Michigan State media day, two things that caught my attention. First of all, Russell Byrd was named the captain. Obviously, it's a reflection of what the other players think of him and maybe right. What a good kid he is and all. But I've got to admit, I was fairly surprised at that he was named the captain. Now, what was your opinion on that? And then, you know, if Tom Izzo can tell me that Keith Appling is shooting the ball very well, and I certainly, as a Michigan State fan, want to hear that. But to me, that is the key issue for Michigan State basketball this upcoming season. Keith Appling has to be, first, willing to take, and secondly, be able to make a reasonable amount of shots for this team to be a good basketball team. How much faith do you have in that occurring? Again, I'm not disparaging Keith. I think he's a very good player. I think he's had a lot put on his plate playing point guard, which maybe isn't his natural position. But to me, towards the end of the season, it was obviously apparent to myself, and I'm sure everyone who played the Michigan State, that Keith didn't want to shoot the ball. And I don't see how this team is going to be successful if he's unwilling to do so. So if you could answer those questions for me, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's three. So let me take them one by one. I think the first question was William Golston.
Yeah.
I think that he has gotten a lot more attention this year. Everyone on that defensive front misses Jarrell Worthy a great deal. They understand now exactly how important he was, how teams had to scheme for him, how he pushed the pocket and made quarterbacks stay back. They couldn't step up now the way they do. And Golston is getting backs who stay. He's getting quarterbacks who roll away from him. He's getting quarterbacks who release the ball, being very aware of Golston's ability to get to them and apply pressure. So there are a lot of factors, but I don't think Golston has played his best football. He's been banged up in a couple of games and has come back. You'd hobble the sidelines or whatever. You would wonder, is he going to be out for the game? And he would always come back. But I think what you're going to see with Golston that's going to help is they're going to start moving him around too. And from side to side and even into the middle. I was talking with Ted Gill about this the other day and also with Henry Bulla. And they both said that sometimes you have to put a great pass rusher into the middle. And that's exactly what Michigan State did with Bubba Smith. It's what Henry Bulla also did with Bryce Pop a couple of years ago. So I think you're going to see that in passing situations in a 3-4, and then you might have Marcus Rush and Shalit Calhoun on the outside trying to give Michigan State its best pass rush. You also then have a 6-7 guy instead of a 6-2 guy in the middle, and makes it easier for him to deflect passes, slant passes, and balls that are thrown over the middle. So I think that's the situation with Golston. Everyone expected he had more than one sack at the midway point. And he's got to pick up his game if he's going to have anything close to the kind of year that everyone expected. Michigan State basketball, I think there were a couple of questions there. One about Keith Appling.
Yes.
I think Keith, definitely the key to this season. I think the center play is going to be fine. I think Brandon Dawson's recovery has been amazing. I think the freshmen are very good. I think there's a lot of depth on this team, a lot of different ways Michigan State can attack. But I think that Keith Appling is the key player on this team. He is a little bit better defensive player than some people thought he would be. He can get to the basket, but in terms of being a consistent outside shooter, I think Todd is exactly right. That's a major concern. And if he can't do that, it's going to put a lot more pressure on some other people. You have to be able, as a point guard, to make an open shot. You don't have to be able to score 25 points a game. But you have to be a weapon. You have to be someone that you have to guard. And in that case, I think that he's going to have open opportunities. He's going to have situations where the shots are there. He's got to take them. He's got to make them. And if he does, I think Michigan State will be a very dangerous team. And it was a third question. What was that?
About Russell Byrd being elected the captain.
Absolutely. Russell mm-hmm. Byrd, this was strictly a player's vote. Mm-hmm. And as I talked to the players individually, I was surprised how much of a difference there was between those two and everyone else. I guess a lot of people don't even think of Russell Byrd in that light since he's barely played. But to the other players, they liked his attitude. They liked his leadership. They liked his team spirit. They liked a lot of things that we don't normally see or associate with a player in terms of captaincy. Eric Nix was a unanimous choice. And there have only been a handful of those in Tom Izzo's tenure as head coach. But Russell Bird was pretty close to that. And he got an awful lot of votes. I asked Russell Bird who he voted for. And he said he voted for Derek Nixon himself. And I thought that was a big statement, that he had the confidence to vote for himself as a captain. You don't see presidential candidates going in and voting for someone else. And if you want a position, if you seek it, then sometimes it will come to you. And obviously he's done enough things off the court to deserve it.
Yes, he has. Hey, Jack, I know you got to go. I want to thank you for being with us today and talking sports with us. And
I just want to say very quickly, we've got a couple of events for people who are still looking for the book. Today, 3 to 5 today, before the homecoming parade, we're going to be at SBS on Grand River signing books. Tonight at Midnight Madness, they are going to have a lot of books at concessions, and it's a great opportunity if you want one to get Tom Izzo to sign it as a gift for someone. He's going to be there at his table, and he'll be signing things and posters, and he'll certainly sign that book if you want to give it to someone as a Christmas gift. Also, Sunday at 1 o'clock, we'll be out at Barnes & Noble in the Lansing Mall. So take a little break from your pro football. Come out there Sunday afternoon and talk a little college football.
Okie dokie. Hey, thanks a lot, Jack, and hopefully we'll see you somewhere tonight. I don't know. Alex will be out ready to spend those big bucks on your book.
Already spent.
I'll see you tonight over at Breadwin.
Okie dokie. See you then. Okay, bye-bye. And that's Jack Ebling talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. And we've got a few more minutes we got before we go to the next break. We'll talk with Alex a little bit. Alex, did you see that game last night?
Of course I saw it. In JV we trust, Earl. That's, I think, the theme that the Detroit Tigers have been riding on all year.
They have. And he's been a dominant pitcher all year long. He's still in the running for the Cy Young. I don't know if he'll win. I think one of the 20 game winners will probably get it, but he's certainly going to be in the hunt, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. The guy is now a veteran. He's had the playoff experience, and it's not like the Tiger team that we've seen in 2010 where they go to a playoff game and the pitchers make errors. It's their first appearance. No, we finally have a team that we have veterans. They've pitched before. There really are no worries when it comes to playoff baseball now.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm curious just to see how they go going up against Baltimore, because if Baltimore wins, because most people just assume, and I know it seems like most of the Tigers assume they're going to be playing the Yankees. And now they might have to switch their horses in the middle of the stream and go to face Baltimore, which is a pretty good team.
Yeah, now who would you rather see, Earl? Would you rather see the Yankees or the Orioles?
I think you'd have to say you'd probably rather see the Orioles, but because the Yankees, we know they've got their whole lineup is good, you know, all the way 1 through 8, almost through 1 through 9, and that's the thing. The Orioles have some holes in their lineup, whereas the Yankees almost have an all-star team in baseball. It's pretty close to it because they pay so much money. So they've got a good solid team. So I would probably go. I'd rather face the Orioles, but who knows who they'd rather fake? I mean, take face, because the Tigers, they've been up and down so much this year. That might cause them to, we don't have to play that hard. We're just going up against the Orioles, you know? They might have that kind of attitude. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think it's probably going to be Baltimore. I got a feeling that Baltimore is going to win that game 5.
Yeah, hey, bold prediction. But honestly, Earl, for me, I would rather see the Orioles as well as the Yankees. The Tigers have had success against them in the past. Obviously, they did go on to beat them in playoffs years ago. Honestly, Earl, I think that the Tigers do have more trouble with the Yankees. And it has to do with the pitching, because a lot of the Detroit Tigers players this year, we do have – it's not like in previous years where you have some righties, like a solidified lineup of righties. We do have a lot of lefties and a lot of righties. And the Tigers, as you know, when it comes to left-handed pitching, this team plays pretty well for the most part. And the Yankees, the thing about the Yankees is they've got some pretty good left-handed pitchers, and I think they're going to have a challenge. I think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle. And in the past, when the Tigers have played the Yankees with left-handed pitching, I'm going to try to load up some stats here. But I think what I remember, when they do play C.C. Sabathia, when they do play these left-handed guns from the Yankee organization, they have had some trouble.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens if it is indeed a Yankees Tiger series. Like you say, you're right on that. The lefties give them a lot of problems. Felix with Cecil Fielder in there, he's one of the few that hits left-handers okay. I mean, he's not. And it's weird how lefties have problems against left-handers. We don't see that so much with righties, but we always see that with lefties. And, you know, I think Cecil's been okay, but, you know, he hasn't been great, but he's been okay. We just have to wait and see how they go if they get the play, the Yankees or Baltimore on Saturday. It should be a heck of a series, that is. Now, with this... With the one coming up tomorrow with Michigan State going up against Iowa, I know Jack and I and Drew, we all pick Michigan State. Are you going with Michigan State or are you going to pick Iowa?
So tomorrow, since it is Friday, we finally can give our picks. I know you gave yours the other day, but obviously with Damon Bullock out, Mark Weissman, obviously a very reliable back for that team. He's in previous weeks, obviously he's rushed for a numerous amount of touchdowns. He's a big guy, hard guy to bring down, a lot of upper body. I'm going to go out on a bold prediction here and take Iowa. I think that, you know, with homecoming, obviously there's going to be some hype.
Yeah.
I think that this team, the way that the receivers have been playing with Deion Sims out, I think that's a huge loss. And
it is.
I think that's a loss, especially with all the pressure on Burbridge. Yeah, I think he is expected to contribute. But I don't think that it will be enough, especially without having that option in Deion Sims. I think that's what it really comes down to in offense.
Yeah, you're right. That's a very good point. Deion Sims is out, and that's going to hurt Michigan State, no doubt about that. And so Burbridge, you'll have to step up big again like he did last week, and that's what he needs. But Michigan State, they can't. One thing, as you know, I've been talking about, they've got to get off to a good start. They can't keep getting off these slow starts.
Right.
Because this is a game, it can catch up with them, and they could get bitten in the butt if they get off to another slow start.
Now, Drew took Michigan State, right?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he took those. I got his list, I think, back in the office. I'll give you the ones he took this week. So, yeah, it's going to be a dangerous game. Michigan State has played Iowa before on homecoming day, and they've had some very good games with Iowa over the years. So, Iowa, it's just a tough out for Michigan State, but their play is very similar. And that also scares me, because you have two teams that basically play the same kind of the same way, the same style.
Yeah, very, very similar styles, and they both have those big backs. Le'Veon Bell, obviously, a little more shifty than a Mark Weissman, but obviously, yeah, they're a run-first team. They're all about the run offense, and when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, yeah, they don't have a Will Golson. They don't have a guy, you know, down at the defensive end that can, you know, block passes when rushing QBs. Obviously, that's a very big addition when it comes to putting pressure on the quarterback.
That's
the one thing about the Iowa defense that you have to realize that I personally really like, and it's their formations. They love running the 4-2-5, and especially the way that their linebackers work. You know, they only need a couple linebackers because they got some really speedy guys back there. They got some really speedy linebackers. They're not the biggest guys, but they're real speedy, and they can really bring down the ball.
And that's a big plus when you have that going for you. That's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The Nobel Prizes were awarded this week. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday. We'll look at the groundbreaking science that nabbed the prizes this year. Plus, the inventor of the LED light source looks back on the 50th anniversary of his invention and some strange doings with the Mars Curiosity rover. All on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up on Talk of the Nation right here on WKAR at 3 o'clock.
Look for a high of 52 degrees and mostly sunny skies today. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, we're expecting rain and thunderstorms with a high of 55. Looking ahead to Sunday, windy with rain and possibly a thunderstorm, the high Sunday, 71. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So give us a call or send us an email. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. And let's go back to the phones, and we've got Robert on the line. Robert, how you doing, buddy?
Fine, and you, Earl.
Hey.
Can you explain something to me for hopefully? Why is not a pass ball or a wild pitch considered an error?
That's been, boy, they established that, I mean, many years ago, back in the 20s and 30s, they decided to establish that since it's not being handled one of the regular fielders out there, the catcher has a different designation as well as the pitcher. So, yeah, they don't, you know, if you hit a ball back to the pitcher and he bobbles it or something like that, then he's credited with an error. But other than that, it's just a pass. Pass ball or a wild pitch, but I don't know exactly why, but I know it's partly due with their designation is a different from the other fielders.
Okay, thanks, because we were trying to figure that out last night, you know, with all the runs that seemed to have been scored off what should have been considered errors, but they never showed it as being an error in the box score, so... Okay, well, I'll go with your answer then.
Okay, thank you, and we'll have to.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll have to just call that up, and maybe you can find out that Alex, while you're there, if why they don't call that an error. Well, let's bring in our next guest, Neil Koepke from SpartanMag.com, and Neil, as you know, the Spartans start officially the regular season hockey games tonight. So, Neil, I want to get your opinion. What do you expect to see from the Spartans since they have so many new players?
Hey, first, Joe, I got to maybe a minor correction there. You got me confused with Rico there at SpartanMag.com. It's MSU Spartan.
MSU, that's right.
Get on the Athletic Michigan State Athletic website, and you can follow me there. But you talked about Michigan State and what to expect and all that for tonight. Well, this really is going to be a very difficult opener because Michigan State is playing the most difficult team in college hockey probably right now. They are loaded. They are full of returning veterans, and they also have some excellent freshmen coming in. Minnesota's ranked number one in one of the polls and number two in the other. And as I was looking at the the early schedule and whatnot, Michigan State, this probably is going to be there's probably not going to be many more tougher games than they're going to face this weekend just because of Minnesota's penchant for offense, speed, skill, and playing on the big ice surface. And so no matter what happens this weekend, it's not going to be as a challenging, you might say, coming down the stretch or the first part of the season and then even in the last because not many teams are as loaded up front. Earl, Minnesota's their top five of the top six scorers are back, and they have combined last year to score 86 goals, and how about this, 199 points.
Wow.
And that's just in a five-man forward group. And then you throw in some defensemen and some new guys from Minnesota, and certainly the Gophers are considered just a big heavyweight amongst the top teams in college hockey. But for the Spartans, it's a good way to start because of the fact that they get – a baptism quickly. They play against a team that is very skilled and will push them. And that's the way you get better. You play against teams like this, and you have to take your lumps at times. But certainly, if it was, an Atlantic hockey team that they were going to, romp over or so, it might be a confidence boost, but you might not really learn to what you have. And again, last year at this time, the Spartans opened up the season against Boston College, which one went on to win the NCAA title. And I can't recall if they were ranked number one or what they were last year, but I think they were at least in the top three or four. And they were a loaded team then, too. And the Spartans played with them for two periods. And then in the third, BC pulled away. But, again, it was a very good learning experience. And as you know, Earl, coaches love to have things to talk to coach. When they,
yes,
when they
do.
Since the team is, hasn't played up to par or made some mistakes, well, it's right there on the video. And so the next week you really can get to show the players what to do. And really, as you probably know and have heard, Michigan State's big question mark this year is just the you know, the defense and getting the defense to be, you know, capable and play with as many as probably four freshmen or first-year players in the lineup to go along with two returnees. And that's a tough nut to really to do right in the season. And so it's going to take a little bit of time, a few months here, for them to get formulated. But the positive news, Earl, is that these guys are pretty skilled. They're bigger. They're mostly all over 6 foot. And they're strong and they're physical. And that will add a new dimension to this team as Tomanassis goes along in his development of the program. They're going to get a little bigger and tougher. And as Tom said when he first came in, he wants his team to be very difficult to play against. And that means guys that are physical, that play with great intensity, and also a little bit of nastiness. And that's coming soon. But this is just another step in the development of the program.
Yes. Now, as you know, we don't have professional hockey this year because of the lockout. Does that anyway? Will that impact the college hockey game with the lockout? Will guys have a tendency to stay more, or will this be a lot of guys last year? Maybe they weren't like with Minnesota. Maybe some of those guys weren't planning on coming back this year, but because of the lockout, they decided to stay in college.
Well, from that standpoint, I don't think anyone made a decision to come back or stay based on the situation with the labor's situation, and now obviously what we've got is a lockout. I think where you'll see it in effect college hockey with no NHL is the fact that there'll be more attention placed on college hockey in some cities, and maybe even nationally with a little bit more games on TV, a little more talk. Some of the national media will probably do features on college players. What they'll do is they'll probably do features on some of the prospects. So some of the national writers that cover the sport, or even like the beat writers in local towns, they might pick up prospects and do stories on them. And obviously many of the prospects in the organizations are college players. So you might get a bump there. But like Ron Mason always used to say, when the Red Wings were going great, it always was better for his program because it basically pushed hockey to the forefront. And when hockey's playing, it helps the colleges, too, because the talk and the beauty of the game is exposed, and then it trickles down the colleges. So as much as there might be some added attention here and there, I don't think it's a big bump in the long run to change anything except for a little exposure here and there. And that's good that happens, so it isn't like a total negative. But I think when the NHL teams are playing, and for instance, Earl, the Winter Classic is going, and the attention that's given at the same time the Great Lakes would be played outside, I think that's much more important than basically having the whole sea to yourself and try to make a little bit more publicity out of that itself. But it'll be interesting just to follow, and obviously the consistent talk about will there be a Winter Classic at all, will they settle by Thanksgiving, will the season start, will it be like the NBA did last year? And I think a lot of people still think that way, that looks like might be the case. But again, you do have some pessimists who believe that this could be a whole year thing too.
You know, that would be disappointing. I know for the legion of hockey fans out there, it would be very disappointing if the strike, or not the strike, but the lockout lasted all year.
Yeah, it would be. There's no good in that at all for the growth of the game and for the players and especially the fans that don't get to, watch the game they love. And obviously, you know, NHL fans and stuff are passionate. It's
yes,
a real
they are.
Sort of a cult sport where you've got the main people, the fans that are there are really engaged in the game. And that's why I think the NHL thinks they can do this without having much backlash, because the fans came back after the last lockout and strike 7 years ago. They came back in droves and the money went skyrocketing, but the NHL claims skirted costs instead of the economy, so that's where they are. But it's certainly more fun to talk about on the ice stuff, and hopefully they can do that soon if they can come to an agreement.
Yes. Well, we know Michigan State's got 10 new players. I assume you saw the exhibition game. How did you feel that the new players fit in with the current players?
Well, I think the chemistry was pretty good. And I think, you know, I think part of that chemistry of knowing each other came from the fact that most of the 10 freshmen and two transfers, the 12 new guys, came into school in July and basically went to school the second half of the season and or second half of the summer session and trained with the regular guys coming back. Everybody was in class. Everybody was together. The team functions. You know, they couldn't practice with coaches, the, you know, the normal summer voluntary workouts, but obviously voluntary means you got to be there to improve, and they were. And yet when you get on the ice, it's sort of a different story because it's on ice chemistry that you need. But they've skated with each other all of September, basically on a captain's practice basis. And I think, you know, guys like, you know, John Drager, the defenseman, he looked pretty good with Jake Chelios. RJ Boyd, Travis Walsh, you know, made an impact, looked good at times. And up front, Matt DeBlau, a center, and Ryan Keller, a left wing. They teamed up for a couple good plays. And even David Bonder, Michael Ferrantino were noticeable. And so I think from that standpoint, those guys have good potential to fill roles, and there are roles to fill, certainly, especially on D, as we mentioned. But the question is, Earl, how long will it take? Will it be a month? Will it be two? Will it be near Christmas before it all comes together? And I think one thing for the fans to, you know, realize here is the toughest position to adjust to as a freshman is on defense. Defensemen just have so much on their plate as far as, like, playing against older players, stronger players, speed players, and also having to, you know, be the person that brings the puck up, makes the plays in the zone, rushes the puck, and then in your zone has to transition back quickly. And that involves skating, positioning, you know, sensing the ice, lots of things. And that takes a little bit of time. So in the early going, if the Spartans are going through some lumps, it just might be those lumps need to happen in – for the team to emerge as a better team in the second half. And again, there have been many instances, as you know, from following college hockey, where a team that looks like it's dead in the water in December suddenly turns it around, and January, February, March is on top of the world. And I think a lot of cases, Northern Michigan is an example of that for one in this league. And another example, even better, is North Dakota. North Dakota has had, over the last, like, 10 years, some brutal starts, some tough Novembers and even December. And people are starting to say, well, North Dakota's not going to be anything at Christmas time. And all of a sudden, they emerge, everything clicks, and next thing you know, they're running roughshod to the WCHA on their way to the NCAA tournament as a contender. So it's what you want to do is stay as close as possible and learn and pull out the victories you can and hopefully – by the time you get to December and then into January and February, that you're clicking. And I think in the long run with these new guys, especially on defense, that these guys are going to be formidable and good defense, but it's going to take some time up to speed. You know, it's not really any different in a way than Michigan State's football wide receivers type thing, and they're meshing with a quarterback that's new, that type of thing. Everyone thinks it might, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of practice, and all of a sudden a game, let's go. Well, sometimes it's a little longer than that. And in hockey, it's the same thing as far as, like, day-to-day practice, getting better, and obviously playing games to give you that experience, a game experience that is so crucial. And in, like, next year, the year after, when these guys are juniors and sophomores and juniors, now that'll be a strength for the team. And then maybe the forwards will be a little bit young and raw, and they'll have to go through that. But, again, it's just part of the plan that, you know, Tom is embarking on here to make the team competitive, being one of the best in the CCHA, and then next year the Big Ten, of course. And then, obviously, overall goal is to compete for national championship every year. And I think that is, you know, in the making right now, maybe a few years ahead to be a real strong contender. But, obviously, you push as hard as you can all times to basically reach that goal in a year or two.
Yes, and we know Tom Manassas, he's often said he wants to compete for a national title, and he's got a young team. It's going to take a couple of years of growth, I would say, Neil. How long do you think, does it usually take 2 to 3 years, basically, to get all the players on the same page and playing, headed in the same direction?
Well, I think in this day and age, Earl, of recruiting younger players, and I'm talking in, it's almost becoming even worse than college basketball, I think, because they are now recruiting kids at age 15 and certainly 16. So some of these kids that are being recruited have 3 years of high school left. and then they come in. And most of them are two. So basically, some of the best recruits that Tom has out there committed won't be coming in here till 2014 and 15. And obviously, that's two and three years down the road. And those kids that are coming in the future are elite level kids. Now, when Tom came in, much of the recruiting for 2 years out was already done, with a couple snags here and there. And so, especially some of the top players that were picked over and committing to Notre Dame, Michigan, or Wisconsin, Minnesota, D.C. at age 15 or 16. And so, when Tom looked at it, I think he basically said, we're going to need, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to really get to the point where everybody, all the sticks are aligned right, all the players are aligned right. And even then, you're going to miss on some kids that you really wanted. So you have to, like, have plan B and whatnot. So I would think that the next year will be a different year, but the year after that, the fourth year of the program, you're going to see the skill level go up. You're going to see the atmosphere change, I think, among the fans a little bit. And I think that's the plan, you know. And you can look at any college football program, basketball program, and when they start again, obviously in basketball, you don't need as many guys like you do for, say, a rebuilding program at Purdue or Minnesota type of thing. But Michigan State, you got 25, 6, 7 guys on a roster, and you play every night 20, and you have 18 scholarships. So it's not as easy as, like, say, you know, men's basketball, where you have 14 scholarships, and you pretty much don't play more than 10. And obviously you can afford to miss on a player here or not. But in college hockey, boy, you got to be careful not to miss. And obviously you have to split scholarships up to maintain a roster of, like I said, 26 to 28 players. But again, it's going to take several years. And again, if Michigan State, Earl, this year could make the NCAA tournament, I still say there should be a parade going down Michigan Avenue, just like or Grand River, just like I thought last year, because last year was a shocker in a lot of ways, and this year it would be surprising too. But again, the goal is to finish in the top five and get the first round bye and go from there, put yourself in the playoff run. And if you're in that, you're probably psychologically pretty good. But I think Michigan State can finish anywhere, you know, as a high and fourth in the CCHA. If things really click and they get some great goaltending from Will Yanikoff and some fast development from the freshman and newcomer defense, and you could drop as far as, like, you know, down in the sixth or seventh spot if things don't go well and you have a couple other teams emerge as surprise. So it's sort of wide open after the top three, and the top three, if anyone sort of, like, is fixated on Western Michigan, Michigan, and Notre Dame, those three teams will be nationally ranked. They'll be the top three in the CCHA going in. We'll see if there's a Ferris State out there that surprises everybody like last year, that wins the title, the regular season title. And who knows, that could be Ohio State maybe. It could be Michigan State. It could be Northern. You just don't know. But again, from all intents and purposes, you know, a fourth-place finish for Michigan State would probably be just a spectacular run, because that would ensure home ice for the playoffs. And the first round bye. Fifth would give you first round bye, but you wouldn't necessarily play at home based on the first round and so forth. So again, that's why they play the games early, and that's why you talk about stuff in October and you shake your head in January and February by saying, how did that happen? And then I think that's what Michigan State is hoping to do. And how you do that is basically just improve as much as you can, take the talent that's there, and hopefully it molds into a cohesive unit and one that wins games and improves and, you know, is right there in February when the season comes to an end.
Okay. Hey, Noah, thank you for joining me. Always a pleasure talking with you. You know we'll be talking more hockey. It's a long hockey season getting started now. So we'll talk later on, my friend.
Thanks,
Joe. Okay, thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Neil Koepke talking hockey with us right here on AM 870. Want you to come back and join us on Monday, and we'll talk more sports. We'll review the Michigan State-Iowa game. We'll talk about some of the other sports. The Tigers will be going into action that night. So we'll talk about that and all the other sports right here on AM 870. So you've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I look to hear from you on Monday and talk more sports right here on WKAR.
From NPR in New York.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.